Second Crop Sires, Divining Rod by Tappan, and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 Mile Training Track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Would you believe that champions weren't measured by rings, but by a crown? That the history books were written on dirt? That the greatest of all time was a horse?
He is running like a tremendous machine.
Experience the magic at this year's Belmont Stakes as we honor the 50th anniversary of Secretariat's legendary Triple Crown Triumph. Join the celebration at Belmont Park on Saturday, June 10th. Tickets on sale now at BelmontStakes.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Second half on this Thursday, and I kind of expected that we'd have a full session with Alan Foreman. I did not necessarily expect to go as deep and as long as we did, but it's always time well spent, and when you have, you know, when you've got the opportunity to, you know, talk to Alan about those topics, especially live like that, can't resist. I know listening in the background was Sid Fernando, and there have been occasions where you've been delayed getting on the air, but not for 36 hours or seemingly that, but that long. I appreciate the opportunity to to get that in.
I gotta say, it was extremely educational, the last two shows you had. Dick Powell, Eric Hamelback, Lisa Lazarus, and now Alan Foreman. I'd gladly give my time away to listen to them. They were all really excellent. And, you know, it's a shame that the quality of these people and what they said, I just, you know, then I read some of the stuff on Twitter, and it makes no sense. There's maybe some of these people aren't listening to you, but they should, because Eric Hamelback, his comments yesterday were so incredible, especially addressing Jim Gagliano's missive in the Jockey Club owned the Blood Horse. Jim's piece just, you know, cried of desperation and pettiness. Unfortunately, I like Jim, but Eric really set the record straight in a lot of ways, as did, by the way, that USTA commentary, which addressed a lot of the fallacies of Jim's editorial. I think you tweeted both of them. Our company Sirewatch encourage anyone who's got any interest in this to read both of them and understand how this very silly fight is taking on idiotic proportions. You know, listen, it's the law right now. Why is Jim Gagliano going on and on about this? And why is he trying to change facts? As Eric pointed out, it's the law. And by the way, The Wall Street Journal came out last night with an editorial from its editorial board pointing out that PISA, its formation, may end up going to the Supreme Court. It's legit. And, you know, it just so happens that Jim represents a very stronghold Republican group in the Jockey Club. And it's the Republicans and the conservatives who are against it. And their think tanks are the ones that are going to fight this. You already know Daniel Schwer is a part of that group. You know, it just makes no sense why it keeps coming out over and over again when it's already the law and it's headed towards possibly a Supreme Court ruling. That said, I'm going to move on to the Lisa Lazarus part. I was very impressed with Lisa Lazarus. Unfortunately, she's come into this, and it's not her fight about the formation of it. It was formed, and she was given a job. She's excellent. She's very up on every issue. She's very impressive to listen to. And you know, she can only work with what she's been given. That said, I found, Steve, that when you brought up the Forte thing, there were a couple of points in that I found really interesting that she said. The first is, and you know, if you are aware of the way the ADMC is put together, you'd understand that that ADMC program incorporates, you know, the findings of ARCI, WADA, which is the World Anti-Doping Agency, and the FEI, which is where Lisa Lazarus came from, Federación Equestre Internacional. International now, you know, the show, the performance horse world. And in their incorporation, as she pointed out to you, meloxicam would probably not have even tested positive according to their protocol.
Right.
Because it's different from what it is in New York. In fact, it was half the amount. Which I found really interesting, right?
Yep.
But the second part I found troubling about her her commentary on it, and I appreciate you mentioning again to Alan about that time frame of adjudication, which would take, you know, 4 to 5 months. But here's the point I found kind of troubling about it. In their haste to address the situation of, say, a Triple Crown horse testing positive with points on the line, she mentioned that if a horse did test positive, before the B sample is even tested, a arbitration panel can disqualify that horse, thereby taking away that guy's due process, actually, because what if the B sample comes back negative? That could lead to even further litigation down the road.
That's a good point.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep, yep.
And in the case where, taking aside that it's a points race or something, in the general part of it, there's the testing of the substance, and then there's the B sample testing. And from that point, the adjudication, as you pointed out, will take as long as it does now, essentially.
Which floored me. I mean, I
know. I was floored also when I heard it.
I mean, because that's why I sounded so exasperated. And for the second time, really, in these conversations, and Lisa's been great about coming on. That's like the fourth time we've done it. I always end up with the same rejoinder. How is this different than our existing system that we've been, you know, browbeaten to believe is a creaking relic and inadequate?
Yeah. Now, to her defense, she did point out that the procedural parts are that if there is a test within a couple of weeks, it will be made public. And they do. I like the fact of what she said about, you know, at least trying to educate journalists, forget about the public, that, and perhaps in this case, it should be the education of one Joe Drape, that a positive of a therapeutic medication is not doping, because they have two separate categories: prohibited, i.e. doping substances, which is an automatic disqualification, and a suspension of the trainer. And as she pointed out, it's then in the trainer's best interest to hasten the process. Instead of, you know, he can't drag it out anymore, he's suspended. So it's in his best interest in that particular case to move towards adjudication as quickly as possible. For the New York Times and Mr. Drape, that should be 101 in how to report if something is quote unquote doping or if it's an overage of therapeutic medication. And I, you know, that part of it, about that was fine. However, you're just never going to get away from the fact that somebody has to have due process. And in her scenario, she said, well, 3 to 4 months instead of maybe 6 to 8 months. And that's a big improvement. Yeah, perhaps so. But, you know, four months is still a long time. So that was a good response in your part to question that.
I was a little surprised because it had been sort of floated as part of, you know, the HISA, you know, hype machine that, oh, these will be rapidly and you know, expeditiously dealt with. Not so fast. Jurisprudence breath.
Yeah. You know, and there's another part in this particular Forte case that the TDN mentioned it. The New York Times, of course, didn't. But it's also the fact that Todd Pletcher says this horse was never given the substance at all. You know, and there's also the mitigating element in HISA's review of anything as well. So, you know, that would bear some investigating. And naloxicam is actually listed on ARCI. It's listed on WADA. It's listed on all their, you know, even though it's not typically one of the NSAIDs that are given to yeah. horses, the product is sold for horses as well. You know, if you Google it, you'll find that they do manufacture it for horses as well. Now, that's all moot as far as Todd Pletcher is concerned, that, you know, he says he didn't give it. Your point about the embarrassment to the industry from the highest profile group, including an ownership group who just the week before was being lauded on social media, and, you know, everybody was dick riding Mike Rupoli about, you know, yada, 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 and now silence this week. You know, it's amazing how you can go from the toast and of the industry and get the sympathy of everybody to, you know, being trashed by, you know, everybody else the following week. It's absolutely amazing how this industry works.
You're not wrong about that. You know, the highest of highs, the lowest of lows, in every
yeah.
which way you
it's
turn.
It's Jim McKay, isn't it? The yeah. wide world of sports.
Exactly.
Remember that in the 70s?
Of
was
course.
What was that saying? The agony of defeat was one of it.
Right.
The yeah.
The thrill of victory and
the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat.
The thrill of being scratched on Derby morning. Joe, I should mention, Joe Clancy has joined the fray as well, Sid. And,
yeah, Joe Clancy's a great guy. I like him.
I'm trying, you know.
How was the breakfast? Quick question.
Breakfast was good. It's a cool. It's always a cool Preakness tradition,
yes.
You know, and it must have been something back in the day.
Yeah.
Like the old day part of it must have been amazing. This is still good, but it must have really been something back in the day.
Agreed. As Johnny D famously for years would talk about, having fried chicken for breakfast is just one of the unique aspects. And for the people who came that one year when fried chicken was not on the menu, it's lucky that there weren't tables overturned.
Well, they should have been banned. You can't complain about free breakfast. I'm sorry. You can complain about a lot of things. Free breakfast you cannot complain about.
If there's no fried chicken at Alibi Breakfast, I mean, why fried chickens at all?
I'm going to guess there were no fried chickens at the first 20 Alibi Breakfasts.
Really?
I wasn't here for the first 20, but, you know.
Well, the first Alibi Breakfasts were out by the racing office on a bench, right?
Right.
They were
out biscuits. Those guys were not complaining about fried chicken.
That's true. That's a fair point. We're going to have Sean Clancy join Joe in a little bit, but let me get a few more portions
isn't Joe Clancy like the most beloved guy in the racing business?
he's up there. No, Joe is definitely.
I think so. I mean, there's not a single person that'll say a bad word about Joe Clancy.
That's true, Joe.
There's a list. Don't worry. There's a handful out there.
Why? You haven't. How could you? No, there's you're.
You beat every once in a while, you know.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you run into the unknowingly, even unintentionally saying, or that you didn't actually say or write something bad about somebody's horse, but because you wrote something good about the rival of that horse, you're therefore slagging that horse. And you're like, well, that's not what I said.
Well, that's minor compared to what Steve Bick and I take.
Well, true. Right. True.
You know what I'm saying?
True.
I mean, I had Jim Gagliano once after I wrote a column called Sue Finley and Demand That She, Gary King, and I appear at the Jockey Club headquarters the next day.
Whoa.
To meet with them. I mean, Joe, you're so far removed from that, bro.
Yeah, you're right. That has not happened. But, you know, you never know. We like to joke around the Saratoga Special Office, we have a going out of business edition, and it'll be the last. It's all ready to go.
Really?
We just have to send it to the printer.
The galleys are set?
Yeah, where we get all those in.
Oh, and that's funny.
It, pull the plug. You know, turn off the lights on the way out.
That's great.
So it is. I mean, all this stuff, I don't know. I read it, I watch it, I try to write educatedly about it, but I don't even know how to explain it to, like, my non-racing friends, who I have a lot of, and this week is when they ask me lots of questions. Every year, they have more than ever now.
Yeah.
You can't explain it. I kind of go, it's fundamentally broken in so many ways that it seems hard, and we're trying to fix it while still flying the airplane, basically. I don't know. It's so frustrating. It's so backwards. And you said it. I mean, the New York Times headline of doping, and then you're trying to explain that to your just regular people who watch 3-4 races a year, you know, and you're like, well, no, it's not really doping, you know, and like, well, why can't they be like NASCAR where everything's under one? I'm like, well, yeah, that'd be great. We would like that. We think we would like that, but I don't know. It just goes round and round.
Well, you could explain to them that, racing predates the invention of automobiles.
Correct. And I try to say, look, it doesn't. Most horse racing people didn't draw up this state by state patchwork of regulations at the beginning. It's just the way it happened.
Well, that,
and now we're trying to live with
racing against each other for their owners. It actually started before there were states.
States, exactly. Yeah.
So maybe that'll help people understand the development curve here. That it's unbelievable that nobody this is America's first sport of any kind.
Right. Well, I
other than killing natives.
Well, yeah. Years ago. See, years ago, I worked for the world's smallest daily newspaper, the Cecil Whig, and they would several times a year bring in these consultants where we had to go have these people talk to us about doing our jobs better. But it was usually on a Saturday when we were supposed to be not working, or in my case, covering a football game or something like that. And they would have all these sort of weird big picture things about how to cover your community and da-da-da-da-da. And I remember saying, well, this would be a lot easier to do if we didn't actually have to keep putting out a newspaper 5 days a week. Like, I'm like, can we, like, if you really want us to do this, we got to stop for 6 months and reorganize and then do it.
Rick Hammerly says that.
I equate that to racing a lot. Yeah. I'm like, if you could go freeze now, start over, what do we want to do? What do we want to accomplish? Then come back. Obviously, it's completely unrealistic. It will never happen. Everything else. But that's sort of what we're also conducting the sport while trying to make some of these wholesale changes, which is really difficult.
Well, point well made. Hammer talks about that we never stop.
Yeah, we never stop. Yeah, there's no off-season.
Take a breath.
Yeah.
Sid, I got to ask you about, because it came up earlier, and I figured, and I saw that you tweeted about it, one of Mr. Fipke's products, Forever Doro, making an impact in Indiana.
Stands for $2,000. He's by Medaglia d'Oro from Lemons Forever, the Broodmare of the Year. So he's a half two grade one winners, one of which is Eclipse champion Forever Unbridled. He stands for $2,000. He stakes place. He was second in the curling. Last year, he's only got like 12 foals. He had a stakes winner last year, Good Forever, which was pretty big, you know, Indiana bred, of course. So last night on that big day, he had two horses win stakes races, $100,000 stakes races, but I had to put out a little disclaimer after Francis Karen, our resident expert, pointed out that they're not actually black type races.
Right.
You know, there's a distinction sometimes between stakes races and black type races. And nevertheless, there were 200 grand stakes races. He's not going to get black type credit for them, but it was a big achievement for him. And for a cheap horse that stood for $2,000, he's extremely well bred. He had some form. He's a really good looking horse, and hopefully he'll continue in Indiana and have a real nice career there as a state bred stallion.
Well, and for those that are listening, and maybe even have a late cover ideas, Breakaway Farm, which is in Dillsboro, Indiana. Breakaway Farm and breakawayfarm.com. And why not? Get a hold of them. All right?
Yeah, exactly. And, that's how so many young horses, and Joe knows this being from Maryland, that's the bread and butter stuff. And occasionally you have one that takes off. I mean, in Malibu Moon in Maryland at Country Life.
Great example.
In fact, tonight you come into Country Life tonight, so we'll see Joe there. It's the annual Country Life Preakness Week gathering, and of course everybody in as well for Timonium for the sale. Another day of breeze yesterday. You bring up Malibu Moon. And said yesterday, Sally Ellen Hurst explaining to me about Maryland Farm, the training center. And Joe, you've been there 10,000 times, I imagine. The amazing timing of Malibu Moon taking off, going from Maryland to Kentucky, which enabled Josh and Michael Pons to buy Maryland Farm, essentially, and save it. The state was lurching toward probably doing something terrible to it, and it exists as a historic facility and part of the Maryland racing and training boarding, and there's been stallions there over the years. Just an amazingly beautiful facility, and by the way, a place that people can actually stay. When people come in for the Timonium the Mid-Atlantic October sale, when they come in for the two-year-old sale. There's places to stay. There's essentially B&B facilities on the property that were the the farm manager's cottage. Mike Trombetta's son and is staying in the little garage apartment. It's crazy. Patty Miller is staying in the house for the sale. Then there's another house on the property. Absolutely spectacular. And while we're doing this, Sally Ellen sent me to a organic dairy.
Oh, nice.
Unbelievable. A mile away, and I'll get this plug in, and I'll put the pictures up soon. This was absolutely fabulous. It's about a mile and a half, give or take, from the farm, from Maryland, on Long Green Road.
Long Green, yeah.
It's the most amazing thing. You literally cross 695, and you go from urban sprawl Baltimore into the countryside in
like
3 seconds.
Yeah.
It just crazy. And I got to tell you, I'm going to give everybody the name because. The place was fabulous, and being me, I got a milkshake and ice cream.
Nice.
Because I had to try both.
And a nap.
The nap came later.
Okay.
It starts with a P, and now I'm trying to dig up the and people are listening and they're yelling at the.
Come on already!
Yelling at the radio.
And
hold
I should
on.
Know. I don't.
I got
know.
It. I got it right here.
Sorry.
Here it is.
Okay.
The Priegel Family.
Okay, Priegel
Creamery.
All right,
Priegel
like
Family
it.
Creamery, and it is. I was right about Long Green. On Long Green Road, Glen Arm is the township. Is the town?
I'll have to stop by there.
Unbelievable.
Hey Joe, where in Maryland do you live?
I live in Fair Hill, so I'm literally 3 miles from the training center.
But they're moving to St. Michael.
No.
They're moving to St. Michael.
Yeah,
well, then Tina and I are going to move to St. Michael.
Someday. But, yeah, so I'm almost to Delaware, basically. I'm right in the very corner of Maryland. And I have a little office right at Fair Hills, which is a cool spot to be.
Oh, nice. Is that where you guys...
It's not where they grew up.
Well, no, you don't put the paper out from there, obviously.
No.
You do it in Saratoga.
Yeah, that's in Saratoga, yeah. But I've been in that general area, half an hour of Fair Hill, basically my whole life. We lived next to Delaware Park for years. We lived in Unionville, Pennsylvania, when I was in high school. And then at another little farm in Delaware before that. So haven't made it very far, but,
They grew up with straw in their teeth.
Yeah. Because...
And shit on their boots.
Exactly. And a horse on your right arm holding a horse doing something.
I think the last time I saw you, Joe, was in the paddock. I was with my wife, and it was in the paddock at Belmont.
Yep. Right?
A couple of years ago.
Yep, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. If not at this man's table at Saratoga one summer, I can't remember. But one of those two spots.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
But wow. I definitely saw you with my wife, though, because I remember that. Yeah, because you came right up to us.
Oh, because we had just been in your neighborhood before that. We were at a I was at a Brooklyn engagement party
my
niece.
Right.
Yeah, and I'm like, they got to live here somewhere.
Yeah, we talked about that. yeah, that's right. We talked about that. I forgot. Yeah, it's amazing how you remember things like that.
I think that was the last thing we went to before. Real COVID, and we're not before
exactly.
You even heard of it. And I remember going, how was that? We were in this very small, crowded house full of people for an engagement party, which felt 2 weeks later felt like a really dumb thing to do. But again, nobody knew.
Sid,
let me
try to corral everything and wrap a little bit. I got to get to Sean yet, and Jay Pribman's coming up. He's here for having received the David Woods Award.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
Anyway, I said my piece.
All right. How about any Preakness thought?
Well, we did the mating of Blazing Sevens for Tracy Farmer. And if Mage doesn't win for Ramiro, I hope Blazing Sevens does. But, you know, once again, asterisk, I'm heavily biased on that.
And well, you should be. Sid Fernando, everybody. Sire Watch, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Sid, we'll do some recapping next week. I'll be home.
Oh, excellent. have a great Preakness, and nice talking.
Outstanding. Sid Fernando, everybody. Sire Watch, excuse me, Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. We're going to bring Sean in here because this is a rare opportunity to have brothers Clancy sort of live together. Kind of, right?
Not live and apart.
Yeah. Well, they're one sitting with me and one standing close by. Sean Clancy on the line, joining his brother Joe.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning, Joe.
Good morning, Sean. How's the view in Middleburg?
Life's great. I'm just staying here overseeing, which is so, in quotation marks, the concrete slab. Just way over my pay grade, but, you know, here we are.
Oh, is it, you broke up a little bit, Sean. You working on the barn?
I'm working on the farm. Sorry, my service didn't grade out here either. Yeah, I'm overseeing the burial of a cement slab, which you can only imagine my expertise when it comes to burying a cement slab.
Interesting. All right.
Is this gonna hold the cell phone tower so you can get reception or not?
Yeah, I wish. That'd be nice. I'd actually get rid of the dial-up internet out here, too.
Well, first and foremost, we got to congratulate Sean on a very successful weekend, going back to last weekend and being with Sean at Percy Warner at Iroquois Steeplechase was just so much fun, and after years of urging me to come, it absolutely was everything I expected. So thanks for putting the spurs to me, and it feels like this will be, going forward, it will be the new normal. Louisville for 2 weeks plus, then Nashville, and then a 10-hour drive to Baltimore.
Yeah, look, I could have cured cancer, and I wouldn't have got the response of getting Steve Bick to Nashville. I just said no. I had no idea how important that was. Everywhere I went, I was like, "Hey, Sean, you did it! You did it!" I'm like, "Wow, yeah."
Well, you also
that was a big deal. Did you have fun?
Oh, we had a fabulous time, and seeing you win. You know, when I come to Far Hills, and when I come places, you win races.
All right, come to Radnor Saturday.
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. You got a horse running here Friday.
Yeah, I'm doing the Pimlico Radnor Potomac point to point triple, perhaps, over the weekend. So yeah, Saranac runs tomorrow at Pimlico. Awaken runs Saturday at Radnor, and horse named Quidditch might run at Potomac if we get a little rain. So yeah, we got a big weekend.
Recap the success at Percy Warner for a minute, and the Green Pastures win for Cool Jet, and your horses, you know, under what might have been trying conditions after we got way more rain than expected, they all acquitted themselves well.
Yeah, I mean, that was a dramatic race, obviously. Watching it, you know, the Hero Next Door is undefeated in this country, front runner. And really, Cool Jet was probably the only horse that could put a little pressure on him. And, you know, he put a lot of pressure on the Hero Next Door, but we put a lot of pressure on him when they were turning in. Those two were battling. But I was impressed. I mean, some people said they weren't going that fast. When you looked and you had Proven Innocent and Going Country and Freddie Flincher on the back foot, I mean, those are good. Those are talented, experienced horses. And the Hero Next Door and Cool Jet had them on their back foot, which I was impressed by that. And, you know, the Hero Next Door had us. I mean, he had put us away, was going to win. And just with the jumps, as we say, and there was some drama. I actually watched it from down by the last fence. And That was a dramatic few seconds there. I was sorry to see the horse fall. He's a lovely horse, gallant in front, and I'm glad he's okay. That was the most important thing, and we were just lucky enough to skirt around him and pick up the pieces, really. But yeah, it was a big thrill to win there. I mean, that's where you want to win. It's a very demanding, tough place. It takes a really tough, gallant horse to win. I think out of all the places I rode, that was the only place where horses would pull up without you pulling them up. They would just be galloping, you'd be galloping along trying to get up the hill, and they basically would just, some of them would just break to a trot. It wasn't even like you were thinking, oh, I'm going to pull up. They would just, throw up the white flag and be like, I can't, I just couldn't do it anymore. And that's where that place is. It was a very demanding, tough course, especially on that ground. But, you know, it's a championship day, and, you know, that's what it's all about.
Well, and the Heartbreak Hill, so named for a good reason. In addition to your action, I did try to reach Willie Mullins. I couldn't get Willie to come on. But for a minute before we talk Preakness, Sean, some thoughts about what we saw with Scaramanga coming over with, you know, a bit of a spotty record abroad. Vanquishing Snap Decision, who was trying to retire the trophy.
Yeah, that was a tough beat for Snap Decision. I mean, he ran hard, was in front the whole way. You know, had a lot of people take swipes at him. Again, that's a championship course. So you got to do it on the day, and Scaramanga was the one who capitalized on it. That was a beautiful ride by Paul Town, and let some other guys kind of soften up Snap Decision, make one run. And, you know, Willie Mullins is just, I mean, he's just all-consuming. I mean, the guy is just an all-conquering type trainer. He wins everywhere with every division, even flat end jumps, different continents. And, you know, if when you have horses like he does, you have to be creative. I mean, Scaramanga is a decent horse over there, desperately wants better ground. He's really, really up against it when he gets soft over there. And David Casey, who's the assistant trainer, former jockey, and he came up with the idea and ran it by the owner, Malcolm Denmark. Said, what do you think about the Iroquois for Scaramanga? That was after he finished fourth in the Coral Cup at Cheltenham in March, which is, you know, it's a good handicap, but, you know, finished fourth and really needed a place to go. And Malcolm Denmark was game, and then they brought it to Willie. Willie was game, and you know, it's I think between the rain earlier in the week and the flow of the race, you know, he just got the best of Snap Decision, who, you know, was gallant in defeat. Again, it's a championship course. That's where it's it just separates them. It's just such a tough place. And yeah, it was a great effort by both of them and others. I mean, it was a solid race. I think all the horses ran the race, and you know, it was a stellar renewal of a classic race.
No, they really ran. I mean, watching the replay live and then replay too. I mean, they ran. It felt like they ran every step of the 3 miles, and there was no let up. And Paul Townen sat second inside, covered up behind Snap Decision, and then stayed patient when everybody else didn't, you know. And then, yeah, I mean, I don't know, that horse's record was, you might say, spotty, but Willie Mullins, they wouldn't have come if it wasn't, good. And no, he's fourth in the Coral Cup, but there's 26 horses in the Coral Cup. I mean, it takes Snap Decision all year to beat 26 horses around here. And, you know, or 22, do the math. You know, I think that, you know, those horses, they're at a bit of an advantage, and then the race flow really, you know, really set up for him. And, I joked with, Mike Hankin, who has horses with Willie Mullins, you know, owns part of Snap Decision. I was like, yeah, Willie Mullins owes him a break on the day rate or something like that to come over here and win, to come over here and beat him in the Iroquois.
Yeah, it was really a fabulous day of racing. The atmosphere. I mean, we didn't get to navigate around, you know, the tailgating as much as we kind of normally would. It was a little messy. It was a little wet and slick. So we kind of went back and forth from that one tent up, you know, up to the course. But it's an amazing facility. And, obviously we'll share, our interest along with Far Hills, you know, sort of a, the two big opportunities, and then you know the action comes to us at Saratoga, home game, as Jay Pribman, who's going to join us shortly, would famously say. Let's get Willowdale. You were with your folks at Willowdale, right, Joe? And
I did a lot more tailgating than work, so you know it was nice.
You hear that, Sean?
No doubt.
It did rain all
he
day.
He always
though.
Does.
It did
he
rain all day.
He's famous for that.
Yeah, that's his thing.
I did see Evan Ferraro facing Tipton's. Evan Ferraro was checking out Willowdale, which was kind of nice.
Wow,
you know,
nice.
A little bit of crossover. You know,
nice.
So he got the sample of Bobby sandwich. If you're ever in Delaware, Capriati's makes a Bobby sandwich. It's Thanksgiving on a roll.
Well,
that was part of the tailgate. Very popular.
Andy Simoff brought us last summer. That was absolutely fabulous.
And he was at Willowdale, too. So there you go.
Andy came down to Willowdale?
Yeah.
That's cool, actually. I should slip in, too, that ask Paddington, who pulled up with an ankle injury, doing okay, and they're going to monitor. But, you know, for those that might have seen notes about Ask Paddington, he's going to have to, you know, make it through some treatment and so forth. But they're optimistic about Ask Paddington. I wanted to get that in. Let me get the two of you to talk about your childhood memories of accompanying your dad here to Pimlico and some wins and maybe some not wins and Preaknesses. I'll turn it over to Sean and Joe Clancy to you know talk about Hi-Ho and some of their experiences here.
Love it. I'm going to go first, and the biggest was winning the Tessio, obviously. I was in freshman in college, and horse named Format won the Tessio, and we had Lonnie Fuller was a great racetrack groom, worked for us, and we're hugging and jumping around like lunatics, and he's like, Joey, act like we've been here. Act like we've been here, you know. And then it lasted about 3 seconds, and we didn't act like we've been there at all. So, you know, that was pretty cool. I remember unloading. The barn is no longer. I can look out this window and see the parking lot where the barns used to be. I remember unloading and setting up stalls there on a really hot, terrible day before the horses got there with some farm crew and a few other things. That was miserable, but it is still cool to come back here. There's a lot of connection to Pimlico, and probably more so from me being here long before I started writing about racing. I didn't come to many Preaknesses, you know. Then it was you were usually somewhere else with a horse, but again, cool. It's there are a lot of cool memories here.
What year did he win the Tessio?
84, the year after Deputed Testimony, because it made you think we could win, you know. Deputed Testimony won the Tessio and the Preakness in 83, and Format won the Tessio in 84, and then didn't make the Preakness. But it made you think that, hey, if they could do it, we could do it, you know, which was pretty cool. His picture's in one of these drawers. We found him.
Last year, right? We found it last year. What about you, Sean?
I remember the first time I going to Pimlico, Dad and I were going down there to run maybe Restless Singleton or one of those old horses. And I remember on the way there, Dad said to me, he said, look, bud, you can't come in the paddock. I just don't want you to come in the paddock. And up till then, the only paddocks I'd ever been in were Delaware Park, Saratoga, and, you know, the hunt meets from around the country. And, I remember being so miffed. I couldn't believe it. Hold on. I got a truck going by me here. There goes the cement slab. And, I was so disappointed. I was like, Dad, I'm like, what do you mean I can't go in the paddock? And then, I got there and I looked and I remember, probably was 10 years old. I remember thinking to myself, well, that's a perfectly fine paddock for a temporary paddock, but I wonder where the real paddock is. Or where they're building the, you know, the Delaware Park Saratoga-esque paddock. And to this day, they're still in the same paddock, which always makes me laugh. But yeah. No, look, Pimlico, it's a shame it's in such disrepair, but I mean, it's just the memories there. It's an iconic old place. It's got a lot of fun kind of personality to it. I guess my first, I covered the Touch Gold Silver Charm Free House Captain Bodge at Triple Crown. After the Blood Horse, that was the first time I'd ever really gotten close to a Preakness. And But I left. I was there every day watching those horses train. I was just, I was in love with Freehouse. I was just in awe of him. And I left there and went to Radnor and rode the car to Radnor. And I remember watching the Preakness on a little black and white TV on the hood of a Imperator horse van, rooting for Freehouse. And but I remember that for me, it was coming to a point where I was like, "Wow, I gotta make some decisions here. You know, do I keep riding jump races or do I, you know, try to get into the journalism part of the flat racing?" And but I remember that kind of being a big moment of kind of crossroads for me. And then I worked with Mike Penn. I did the Triple Crown with him up to American Pharoah. And that was, I laughed. I tell Mike Penn, I ruined a $500 pair of shoes and he paid me $250 for the day. I thought, man, that was a bad deal in the rain. At Pimlico.
I think we were both on the radio when the storm was coming, right? And Jude and Mike were upstairs saying, "What a glorious day!" We were on the turf course looking back at this black cloud that was just going to swallow the whole place up. And you're like, "I don't know. You might want to get off the roof." Like, it was wild.
No, that was nuts. I mean, that was a moment where you're kind of standing there thinking, "Are they really going to have this race? I mean, can they really run this?" That was Armageddon for a few moments.
Yeah.
But an amazing moment. I mean, it was an incredible moment to kind of be out there and cover like that, which was it was fun. It was a totally different perspective when you're out there on the track or on the turf trying to figure out interviews and trying to get people you know, to talk to you while you're watching it, while you're still a fan, you're working and being a fan at the same time, which is always a funny kind of walkway to try to navigate.
Well, and finally, Sean, Joe, the Clancys joining us together again for the first time, as they say.
Is there like theme music now? What would you?
Yeah, exactly. There's
all show tunes.
We'll bring up the Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Okay, good. I like
actually
it.
The Preakness thoughts. What you got? An expectation? Or are we looking at a Triple Crown try?
Go ahead.
No, I mean, look, I think I was impressed with him in the Derby. This one seems going to come back at 8-horse field. I think he's got as good a chance as most horses trying to do it. Fresh horse, obviously, that's a strong, strong form to kind of follow in the Preakness. Obviously, Brad Cox's horse, Chad Brown's horse, they're tough, fresh. But look, you know, at this stage, you're a racing fan. You like to see Mage win it, and then you know, at least be swept away for 3 weeks of bedlam going to Belmont. I mean, that's just about as far as I can. I'm a fan of the Derby winner when they, you know, whoever it is, when they're going to the Preakness. It's just how I look at it.
I agree. Yeah.
No, and it was. I mean, I agree too. I mean, it's kind of. This was the first morning I've been out there, at least to see horses train and whatnot. And he looks, Mage looks great. I mean, he's funny on the track. He really, really wants to do more, but then he walks back to the barn like, you know, okay, no problem. And it's kind of cool to see. I did watch Perform gallop. I thought he galloped really well today. I mean, just sort of in that only Shug McGee way, talking about the two turns hitting him in the head, and you know, but a second time that horse came around, he looks so good. And again, he's got to step forward, you know, I guess he's got a right to. He's got to probably step forward a lot. He was in a maiden race with the maiden race that Mage won, which I kind of didn't realize till recently. He was beat 4 or 5 lengths, and you know, would, if he's moved forward off that, obviously Mage has, you know, so. Maybe that's a horse that's got some value a little bit. I did talk to Brad Cox about his horse this morning, too, and he seems confident, like he likes that horse and thinks he will, same thing, progress, take another step forward. It's funny to see those later developing horses like that, like a Perform, like Brad Cox's horse, like some of these horses coming along that obviously have a right to get better, you know, by this time of year.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that it might end up surprising a little bit, when it's all said and done. So that might.
Well, what's the surprise? You can't leave it at
well,
that.
Yeah, I just say surprise. No, I don't mean a surprise.
Go out on that limb.
Not necessarily a surprise.
Coffee with Chris? What do you think?
No, no. That's all.
Right, gotcha.
Yeah, that's my surprise. The biggest surprise is that Jay Pridman
is here, retired and everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They can't
keep him away.
No. He's just going to keep winning. Sean, I appreciate it, and congratulations again. Thanks for everything to get me out to Nashville.
I'm glad it worked out. That was fun to see you there. And as we always talk about, we love when the world, some of the sports get back together. It's fun to see. There's some flat racing people out there, which was fun. That's what we're always rooting for.
Jay Pridman's coming next year.
Maybe. He may, actually. You know what? That's a good point. Joe, thank you.
Thank you.
Joe Clancy, Sean Clancy, everybody. And this is Horse Racing. .com for now, but soon enough it'll be Saratoga special time, and it's always special. It continues to be special when Jay Pridman keeps turning up at these events.
I'm just trying to follow you.
Oh, I'm working.
Yeah, well, I'm just I'm just getting in that wake right behind you. Drafted.
Please, Joe. Thank you. Joe Clancy, everybody. Congratulations. I'm sorry that you were there when I got the old Hilltop, and I'm sorry I couldn't be downstairs enjoying fried chicken for breakfast.
Well, you had to put you got a show to do.
Exactly.
The show must go on.
The show must go on.
Yeah.
And we should say hi to Ann.
Ann is here.
Ann is here. Her first Pimlico?
First time at old Hilltop.
Well,
I'm taking it all in.
Right? It's an adventure.
It's something.
Well, at least you didn't get stuck in the elevator. That wasn't even an option.
Yeah, Dave Grinning warned. The first text I got from Dave after he got here was just a photo of the elevator out of order, and just a two word caption under it.
Well,
hi ho.
Dave Joseph warned us when we were at the Florida Derby. He said, "I'm telling you now. Don't expect an elevator. They can't find the guy. They can't find parts. There aren't enough squirrels to go through the treadmill to get it up and down. So we've been hiking up and down. One more day of dragging the equipment up the stairwells. And today, actually, one of the escalators was turned off, which made it even more of a challenge.
That's all right. You're getting your steps in, Steve.
It did occur to me going up those steps. I said to myself, I'll tell you what, if that second heart attack comes in this press box, how are they going to get the... You think about that, right? God forbid. How are they going to get...
The last time I thought about... Well, not it's a variation on a theme, but in 98 when they had the big heat wave here and the power went out and it was like 100 degrees in here. My lasting memory of that day was Dick Girardi, who is grew up in this area and cut his teeth gambling on Maryland Racing, coming to me in the press box and telling me the back routes out of here in case there was a fire and how to get out of here because the elevator was out and had the different other stairwells
that were
here. So yeah, so that's how I think about. I haven't had the specific thing that you were just referencing, but that's what.
Too funny.
Great memories at Old Hilltop.
Exactly. Well, tell us about the experience, and I think it came up in one of your visits after it was announced that you were getting the David Woods. But I mean, they're naming streets after you.
I'm just glad it wasn't a dead end.
Hey now.
Yeah.
A cul-de-sac.
No, it's the extended retirement tour, I guess.
Big time.
But no, I mean, it's been very nice. I mean, the thing at Old Friends that you were referencing a couple of weeks ago was really kind of Michael Blowen to do that. And it was, obviously an honor to have a street named on the farm after me, but also to have it done in conjunction with Dave Litvin and Bob Neumeier, both of whom I work with.
Yeah.
So that had a lot of good meaning to it. Unfortunately, it would have been nice if they'd have been around to take it in as well. Then this was a pleasant surprise. No expectations, but I've always felt that when with whether it's the Eclipse Awards or Breeders' Cup Riding Awards or any of the Triple Crown tracks that have awards like like Maryland Jockey Club does with David Woods, you should enter even if you don't even like what you did, because if they're having these things, you need to support it. Because even if, not that you expect to win, but it's like, if only four people send entries in, why would they continue it? So I always send something in. But actually, as it turned out, last year, I'm super self-critical of my work. I really liked the story with Wayne, and it had to do, as stories often do, with the person that you're interviewing, if you get good material out of them. And Wayne Lucas was great last year as we went down memory lane on all his, you know, his Preakness highs and lows over the years, and it just made for an easy story to tell, thanks to him.
Well, the stories, the stories are why we come. Whether it's the handicapping and the horseplay, or it's the human, it's the equine. There's so much, and the history here is particularly rich. And I happen to love, you know, that I kind of love the ramshackle nature of
you like going through all the old photos
that too.
In here too, right?
I do. I absolutely do. It's a special place and a special racing community. We had an extended visit with Alan Foreman this morning. I was out at Maryland yesterday. We'll be at Country Life Farm today, and it has a distinct parallel to Kentucky. Because they were the only two jurisdictions that survived during the gambling blackout,
right,
1908 to 1911. And the only racing in America was Maryland and Kentucky.
Yep.
And so the fact that we still have an industry in no small part is due to these two, two regions.
No, I always enjoyed coming here. I was talking to Gabby Gaudet for TVG earlier today. We were talking about, what makes the Preakness special. And, you know, first off, everything's focused on the Derby winner, because now, you know, a week and a half after the Derby, there's only one horse now who can win the Triple Crown, as opposed to 20 or, in this year's case, 18 possibilities when they went in the gate. It's just a much more relaxed atmosphere here. Most everybody's in the stakes barn. If they're not in the stakes barn, they're one or two barns over. I think everybody's more relaxed here. The Derby is just so overwhelming. So that was one of the things I always enjoy about coming here for the race. But beyond that, I just think this is one of the most underrated cities in the country. There's just so many fun things to do here. And so when Dave Joseph let me know that this award was happening, I was like, you know, let's go. Baltimore's fun. We can spend a few days here. We've got some friends who live in the Philly area we're going to go visit. So it just made for like a nice, easy trip and a good excuse to come to America, what I think is America's most underrated city.
Have you, I have to get this in, of course, because I haven't yet mentioned the nutshell studies of unexplained death.
Okay.
Have you heard me talk about this?
No, I probably haven't. Because, you know, as I've told you many times, I only listen to you when I'm driving.
That's true.
So if you weren't talking about this while I was in my car, the answer would be no.
Then you've missed it.
In this specific case, unfortunately.
Well,
go ahead.
The nutshell studies of unexplained death.
All right. Is this like the drummer in Spinal Tap?
No.
Oh, okay. Because, you know, spontaneous combustion is happens more often than people know.
They are little dioramas,
all right,
of deaths that are housed at the Baltimore morgue, the city morgue. This is a wild, I mean, there's a book about it.
I think I'm going to go for crab cakes instead, but go on.
Well, they're used these days. They've been used for many years to train detectives and to train young aspiring detectives,
right,
in the police department, where they look at the diorama, they take in the evidence. They were created by a wealthy socialite type in Chicago, the Nutshell Studies. And I, you have to call the coroner's office. You call the coroner's office and make an appointment to go in. And very famously, Robin Williams,
right,
when he was filming that episode of Homicide: Life on the Streets, which,
right,
is one of the,
right,
most incredible,
yeah,
and the episode with him where his wife is shot, and it's incredibly emotional. He famously went in there. You know, he was filming and was apparently in a dark mood, in essence, because of the character and the filming. And famously, that's how I first heard about it and read about it,
right,
in Nutshell Studies. And so I will send you a link, and you can call the office.
Oh, we'll be right over.
The assistant, they're
right, honey? Ready?
The Nutshell Studies of Unexplained Death.
All right.
I have to get a reference to that. And very close, right around the corner, have you been to the B&O Railroad Museum?
Yes.
Okay, so
been
right
in there.
It's right around the corner.
That's more interesting to me, but to each his own.
I don't know if we have a ton of, we don't have a ton of time because I do have to get to Jeff Franklin
yet.
Well,
please do.
Since we went careening off on this exit ramp. What's your, you've got, I'm sure, an opinion on this latest concern over no Derby horses coming to Baltimore. The sky is falling. What?
I don't know. You know, Steve, I know I retired last year and I know I'm getting a little bit older, you know, now that I'm...
my age?
Yeah. That we're both 63, you being 2 weeks older than me. But I know my memory might be going, but I seem to recall maybe it was 2015, maybe again in 2018. I think there were Triple Crown winners, right? So this whole thing of, like, we need to fix the Triple Crown, it's like, no, we need to fix the mindset of people who run by appointment and have hothouse flowers to run. And the other thing is, look, I don't know if extending the Triple Crown spacing would make for more winners or less winners. It might make it harder, actually, because you might have more horses running back. But I think one thing that people don't maybe or need to think about a little more is that when the Triple Crown is at its current spacing of 5 weeks, all eyes are on racing for those 5 weeks. I don't know that you would get the general public's interest held for 8 weeks or longer if you spaced it out more. We have very small attention spans these days. And when the Derby winner has to run back in 2 weeks, you know, that holds people's attention. Mm. And I don't know that you'd get the same thing if in the meantime, oh, look, the French Open's going on and we got the PGA. So, but regardless, you know, I don't think recency bias should enter into these things. And, you know, look, it happened this year. And to me, you know, shame on the 17 or whatever of those 17 could have potentially run back. Look, if the horse is knocked out, you know, and needs more time, that's one thing. But I can't imagine that all of them are in that boat. And, you know, this is an American classic. And so I give the Mage people credit. I mean, they're here.
Exactly.
And they shouldn't be punished or have their accomplishment, you know, lessened in any way if they win by saying, oh, well, who'd they beat? You know who they beat? They beat whoever showed up, and they were here, you know, so whatever. Anyway.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you. I agree. I've got the same kind of mindset, too, that some of this also is unintended consequences, including the Derby being a monolith and those horses that were on the AE list going ahead and running when they...
Right. If those horses don't run, a lot of them run back.
Exactly.
If Fort is scratched by his connections, instead of being a vet scratch, he runs, you know, et cetera. So I think if you take a wider, sober view of the situation, some of this talk about, well, we need to fix the Triple Crown or whatever, is a gross overreaction to specific events in 2023 that don't bear reality to, you know, the totality of a situation. Because, again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I do think there were Triple Crown winners in 2015 and 2018, which was both within the last decade. So.
Let's see where we are at 6:59 on Saturday night when everybody may be going, oh my God, Mage, he's going to win the Triple Crown.
Well, we'll see. But whatever. Regardless, it's fine the way it is. Anyway.
Well.
Thank you. Is Jeff waiting? I don't want to.
I'm going to bring him in. You know Jeff forever.
Jeff forever. I knew Jeff when he was a jocks agent.
Well, that's what everybody says. Yeah. They all say they knew, and you called him Crafty.
Crafty.
Everyone called.
That's his name.
This is so funny. Everybody, whatever I say, Jeff Franklin is next. Marty last week, 2 weeks ago. Crafty.
I'm going to bid you guys.
Thanks for having me on, Stephen. It's an honor to be behind Alan Foreman. Now, as far as Privman, okay, that's questionable.
Yeah. It's kind of like a roller coaster. It went down the dip, and now it's going to come back up, Jeff. So
there you go. That's a sine wave.
All right, guys.
So here
thank
we
you.
Are.
Oh, so great. Jay Privman, everybody. And Ann. And are you guys staying around? Because I got to take a picture of you guys together somewhere. All right. So 5 minutes when we wrap up. Beautiful. Jay Privman. Jeff, here's what we're going to do. Because we do have two races to talk about. So we're going to do 5 minutes right now about tomorrow's 11th race. And then we'll come back and if we have a spot, I'm just trying to think if we should do the other race tomorrow. But some people are going to have to bet the two. All right, let me turn it over to you and talk about the Hilltop tomorrow.
I think we can get all this stuff
all right,
in.
Let's go real quick. We got five minutes.
Okay, great. So as I look at which race did you want to start with? You want to start with the Phillies or you want to start with the sprint?
No, it's gotta be with the Friday race, the 11th, which kicks off the 2 day all stake pick five.
Oh, okay. And so let me just shuffle in here. Okay, so we're going to start with the Phillies. Okay. The Hilltop to me is a fabulous race from a thoroughbred perspective for this reason. We're all dealing with limited data. Who's going to be the filly or fillies that are going to step up and really do so now? We have basically five fillies. You can just throw them in a hat and pick out who you want. And the race is even more fascinating because two of the top jocks are dropping their previous mounts and going to top barns. So, and that to me leads up some market inefficiency because I'm not sure they're making the right choices. I think they're going to Chad Brown and Todd Pletcher, who the hell wouldn't, and leading a horse like After Eight, I think she's actually, in my view, just as eligible to move forward as anybody in the race. She's 12-1, and she, along with Up and Down, who happens to be a Chad Brown, is the other deserted filly that a jock is going to another horse for. So those are my two keys in the race. And for two reasons. One is, After Eight, basically the fastest filly in the race with very limited data. And Up and Down has my favorite thoroughbred pattern. And that is a horse that comes off the layoff, goes right back to where they were before. It's as if, okay, I'm fit. I'm ready to rock and roll again. I'm moving forward in this start. So those are the two I'm keen on in the Hilltop. And would it surprise me if a Breathaway got up or an Asprey? No, it would not. But those are the two at huge prices, I think, Steve. 12-1 and et cetera. Wow. How are you going to beat that?
I completely agree, and our listeners are very familiar with After Eight, thanks to conversations with Arno Delacour before she won the race at Keeneland. We were clued in to her. She's a serious filly with upside,
serious, yes.
With upside yet, and the two Chads are both quite nice. Well into. I mean, I think there's enough speed to accompany her because otherwise, Saez on that type could be tough. And Breath Away from the rail should get a good trip to Sanibel Island winner. Let's turn to the Maryland Sprint then on Saturday. We got 2.5 minutes.
Great. No problem. I love both the four-year-olds. Al loves Josie and Nakatomi. They both have, or two of the four-year-olds, they both have a couple things in common.
They are classic thoroughgraph development profiles. They ran repeated twos as three-year-olds, which project to a minus number as four-year-olds. They both ran them. Oh, and by the way, in their last start, they both had trouble. So that tends to increase their value because the public, you know, doesn't know what to do with that. We all actually welcome the fact that they had trouble because they ran a top, they regress, and they're likely to come back to the top. So to me, it's real simple. I'm focusing on those two, and I'm going no further.
Fair enough. Easy enough. That yeah. race, the 11th, is part of the leg four of the all dirt pick five.
Right. And I would only I'd say one more thing because I realize we only got seconds. Straight No Chaser, you know, ran a very, very, very good number last time.
Yeah.
And yet it's very difficult to project him as not either pausing or regressing slightly off that number. It's another reason why I think thoroughgraph guys really like to take that kind of view and say, okay, he's probably not stepping up here. That would be a lot to ask of him. So I'm gonna go against him at a short price.
Well, the opportunity to discuss Thoroughgraph with everybody Thursdays with Jeff Franklin. Go to thoroughgraph.com and click on the click here. Provide your email address, and the two races will be sent to you free each and every week. Jeff, I appreciate it, and we'll be a little bit more relaxed when we do some recapping next week and look ahead to whatever is the most interesting race to discuss winning with Thoroughgraph with everybody. Thanks.
Great, Steve. Thanks, and good luck to everybody out for the Preakness. Take care.
Jeff Franklin, folks, and thoroughgraph.com. Thanks to Jerry and the team for getting the figs out to everybody each Wednesday evening ahead of these conversations. And the conversations today included Jeff and Jay Privman stopping by after the Alibi breakfast, as well as Joe Clancy and brother Sean. A little bit of crossover, both Preakness and some steeplechase conversation, Sid Fernando. Sirewatch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale. And then the extensive discussion with Alan Foreman, which if you missed today, you will want to catch up either tonight on the archive and pod or tomorrow on the replay 6 to 9 here on SiriusXM. And thanks, too, to Peter Rotundo, Jr., who came by to go over the betting menu. A lot of pick fives, almost rolling pick fives, as Peter says. Get hot, stay hot. That'll help you negotiate. I will have the final Friday opinions up. They're already up, but I'll have the plays and everything else in a little bit. And we'll talk to you tomorrow, Black Eyed Susan Day. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you then.
XM Radio. Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The
Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warf.